We're back to the Neil Haley Show here on the Caregiver Dave Celebrity segment. I'm excited to welcome to the program Caregiver Dave and Sandy. Dave, how are you? And what's
I'm
going
awesome.
On, man?
I'm awesome. How are you doing?
Good. Didn't you like last week's conversation? I always have great conversations.
It was amazing. You never disappoint, Neil. You never disappoint
whoever you're getting. You never know their story, what their story is going to be about. And that's what's so great about interviewing over 7,000 plus people. And someday I'll have them all in one place to find them all. But that'll be, I have to hire somebody that cost me hundreds of thousands of dollars. But our guest today is Peter Woodward. And Peter Woodward is, we know him from The Patriot. We're talking about Dolphin Island and his career. Peter, what's up? Thanks for stopping by. How are you?
I'm pretty good. You should get the Super Bowl, actually, for all your 7,000, you know, and as they increase over the years, you know, you should have a sort of Neil Haley Super Bowl in which everyone, you know, sits around
together for an event, all the different celebrities all together. Yeah. And anyone that's been on the show, I love it. You can set it up.
Security.
We could be in LA and, you know, it could be a super spreader. Yeah, I wanted to celebrate 10,000 interviews whenever that day comes, and I'll make it up and say we hit 10,000. Okay, let's invite as many people to a great event. I love it.
I think so. I think that's a great idea.
So it's kind of funny, Peter, that when they talked about, you know, number of shows, there was a show called Mike and Mike in the Morning that was on ESPN, and they were celebrating how many years, and they did it longer than me, but they did less shows. I'm like, what did I do? How did I do this? But it's because I've short interviews. Some are 8, some are 15, some are 30, some are an hour. And when I was just doing radio shows, yeah, I produce 5 hours of programming a week, right? But there's maybe 10 interviews out of those 5 hours. And then it goes to podcasting, and our business has changed, right? Podcasting used to be a thing that people were like, podcast, I'd rather be on a radio show. Now it's changed, Peter. Isn't that amazing how things, you know, change in the way?
It is, but also, I mean, in the past year, for obvious reasons, you know, it used to be frankly, a bit of a pain to do these interviews because you'd either have to do them on the telephone, in which case you had no real contact, or you had to go into a studio and you had to dress up and put a tie on and all that stuff. And now, you know, you're in my home. You know, just
right, and the tours would be all such a pain in the butt. You've done them, right? Where you've done those tours where 9 to 11 in the morning, which would be 6 to 9, 8 for you, and you're constantly talking to somebody for 15 minutes about a project, right? You've done those, been there, done that. Have a t-shirt to prove it. I've been there and done that, and I won't do it anymore. I'd rather have a longer one because you don't get to develop that connection and that relationship. So let's talk, Peter. You're known for The Patriot. So for Dave that saw The Patriot. And I did too. Tell us your character in The Patriot before we get to Dolphin Island.
I'm trying to imagine who you were. And I think you were that bad British officer who killed everybody.
No, I was the aide-de-camp to the bad British officer. The Patriot is, it's something that a lot of people remember me for. I've done a lot of other stuff. But yeah, that does.
You had hair, right, at the time?
Yeah, yes, I did. Well, it was a wig, you know. I mean, in those days,
everybody wears wigs.
We bald folk didn't have to worry because everyone wore wigs anyway, from George Washington down.
Right.
So, you know, everyone had hair. So that was all right then. It's crazy that that's so remembered. You know, I had a relatively small part in it. But it was one of those last really great, huge movies. I mean, I remember going to the set of The Patriot, and I saw this vast field with massive mechanical cranes and camera trucks and, you know, and then I thought, this is amazing. And then they said, oh, no, there are 3 more fields after this.
You know? What was it like working with Mel?
He was great.
For Mel.
He was great. He was a really nice guy and very friendly and, not starry at all. My father was a well-known actor, so I'm used to being around stars and working with them.
Yeah,
and
you guys are real actors, like Sir Richard Burton, the Royal Academy of Dramatic Art, Royal Shakespeare Company. Wow.
That stuff. Yeah. I've done all that stuff. But it's also that, you know, because of that, I don't have any time for anyone who's remotely starry. I just walk away. But Mel was a really nice guy and a very, very talented too, a very fine actor. Okay. And I think because of the difficulties that he's had over the past few years, which I know he's been trying to solve, but because of those difficulties, you know, we tend to forget what a really good actor he is. You know, that's my opinion. Anyway,
that's true. Yeah. So, Peter, I could just kind of answer that question. You said it was a small role. What was the role in The Patriot?
Well, I was the assistant to the really bad guy, or one of the really bad guys. In
he did
there.
His dirty
and,
work.
General O'Hara was my name. Yeah. But yeah, and it was one of my earlier jobs when I came to Los Angeles. I came here about 20 years ago, and it was one of my earlier jobs. And you know, I've done a lot of TV and stuff since then. And
and you're
also a writer, so I mainly write now. That's mainly what I'm up to at the moment. You see that cat in the background?
I do see that cat.
That's cool. That's a great thing. If Dave wants to bring up cat, I'm not going to go cat. I'm going to go real quick. One more question, Peter. What do you think your fans see you best known for? You have a good laundry list of different major shows you were on.
Probably a bunch of those science fiction shows that I did, Crusade and Babylon 5, the movies of Babylon 5 and Charmed. I was the source of all evil in Charmed, I'll have you know. And not many people can say they're the source of all evil, but I can. That was the old Charmed.
You've got that look, yeah.
I guess, yeah. Well, we all have that look, don't we? You know, I mean, well, when you've got this up there, the thing is that everyone tends to cast you as a baddie. Which is why doing this movie Dolphin Island was so great, because you know, for once I was a good guy.
Yeah, you were a good guy and a very good guy. So tell us about the character and the premise of it. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, Dolphin Island is one of those rare things nowadays, which is a family movie, really designed for everyone to watch and enjoy, and it's about a young girl who's orphaned. And she goes to live with her grandfather in the Bahamas. And we shot the whole thing in the Bahamas just before COVID. So we were really lucky. And it was really the most beautiful locations in the Bahamas. Fantastic place. But of course, I wasn't the star. And the girl playing my granddaughter wasn't the star. The star was a dolphin. Okay. There's these dolphins.
You can't be a dolphin, right? You'll never get autographs that a dolphin will get, right?
Yeah, I mean, the dolphins were the most amazing actors. I mean, they're extremely well trained. And we went to a facility where they are completely open to go out into the ocean if they want. You know, they're not trapped or penned in any way, because we didn't want any of that.
So they worked voluntarily.
They worked voluntarily. Well, they work for fish. You know, kind of like me. You know,
we'll work for fish.
Too. You know, give me a good fish, I'll do you a movie.
And I bet you have a new appreciation for dolphins.
I do. They are the most extraordinary creatures. I mean, obviously they're mammals like us, and you tend to forget that. You know, you get into their element, which is the water, and you tend to think, well, this is obviously the cat again. Obviously, you know, this is the dolphin world, but it's also a mammal world. And these dolphins, they look at you, you know, they look straight at you. And you know that they're thinking about you and who you are and whether you're going to be okay and whether you're going to hurt them or whether you're going to play with them and whether you're going to give them fish, most importantly. And they were amazing. And of course, their trainers, their Bahamian trainers, were just extraordinary with them. You know, I mean, we asked them some pretty difficult things. You know, do you think we could get a dolphin to pick up a, you know, a discarded piece of trash on its nose? And they said, well, we've never done that before, but let's try it. So we had this character throwing some trash into the water, which of course he shouldn't do. And the dolphin came up underneath the trash, lifted it up and gave it back to us. It was just extraordinary. Never done that before, you know? So, I mean, if anyone ever thinks, you know, the mammals that are in the water, the whales and the dolphins, and, you know, anyone ever thinks that they are so far away from us that it doesn't matter what happens to them, well, you look a dolphin in the eye and you'll change your mind.
Well, it sounds like a great family movie with a lot of moral subjects. That's awesome.
Yeah, and it's fun and it's exciting.
Shortage of that,
And it's basically because the other grandparents who are rich come to try and claim the granddaughter back.
I'm a great grandfather, so yeah, my job is cut out for me. So are you drawn now to family films?
Well, yeah, I am. You know, I've always enjoyed things that I don't like.
You've got kids of your own?
I do. I have one, but he's 26, so he's on his own now.
But grandkids on the way.
Yeah. Well, maybe. but I don't like violent movies. I just don't. I don't watch them because I don't like them. You know, and I've written some. You know, I've written some violent movies, so I understand that there is a place for violence in movies if it tells the story and if it's part of the story, but I just personally don't like watching it. I just turn it off.
Me too.
I've just, funny enough, I've just finished directing my first movie, which is a comedy, a romantic comedy. So I'm very much into what is being made at the moment and what is not being made. And I don't think it's an excuse for COVID. I don't think that's a good enough excuse. There simply aren't enough movies being made which are genuinely family oriented. Now, I know they're all the superhero movies, but I don't know what you feel about them. For me, there's too many explosions, too many people being knocked down, and you know,
I'm a sucker for romantic comedy, but you know, that makes me a wuss, right?
Well, you would have thought so. I think the problem is that the romantic comedy has gone into a bit of a decline lately. You know, there haven't been any really good ones.
Because of, again, COVID. Because again, you can't really have a romantic comedy in life because really, or no one's living that life right now.
So I think people have given up on romance, you know, because they can't find that relationship and they're in a bad marriage and you know, they're constantly breaking up with their boyfriend, girlfriend. And,
let's
and
hope
a lot of them have given up.
Dave, let's keep the positivity. So let's move on. So Peter, the movie, what would you say your fondest moments of being in this movie? Like working with the cast, kind of give us that update. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there were a couple of great moments. It was working with the Bahamian locals, some of whom were actors and good ones, and some of whom had very limited acting experience. But they were really, you know, open to it, and that was very enjoyable. I just liked working in the Bahamas. It was such fun. But yeah, no question. I mean, working with those dolphins in the water, it's just an extraordinary experience. You're so aware that they are looking after you. In fact, one of the trainers told me that there was a, when they went out into the ocean once, there was a wild dolphin. And occasionally a dolphin will take against you and butt you and not like you, you know. And there was this wild dolphin which was circling the trainer, and the other dolphins gathered around him and they swam with him back to the boat and they kept the other dolphin away. Wow. And you think that's extraordinary because that means that they actually not only could see what was happening, but had decided that they were going to intervene.
Very intelligent.
And decided that they wanted to intervene, you know, that they didn't want this person, this human, to be hurt. You know, and I mean, you get the feeling, I mean, if ever you get a chance to go down to Florida, go wherever, if you ever get a chance to swim with dolphins, it is the most extraordinary feeling that you have with these creatures. And that's what I think everyone in the cast you know,
they used to do that at Marineland down in, and then you know, the conservatives shut them down. So
Well, I think it's very important for all mammals, whales, dolphins, whatever they are, to be in a facility which allows them total access to the ocean if they want to go. You know, that's my feeling. If they want to swim away, then they should be allowed to. I don't believe in penning up dolphins unless it's a specific purpose, you know, if they're sick or they're unhealthy or something. But otherwise, they should be free.
Yeah.
Was this your first experience working with dolphins?
Yeah, totally. Totally. And, you know, and I come from England originally, as you can probably tell from my accent. And we have a lot of dolphins and porpoises all around the coast, but it's too damned cold to get in the water most of the time. So you don't really want to go near them.
Welcome to LA.
Yeah.
So absolutely. Can you tell us the plot of the movie without spoiling it for those who haven't seen it?
Yeah. Yes. It's really pretty straightforward. A grandfather looks after his granddaughter. And they go fishing and they live a fairly basic existence. She goes to school, a local Bahamian school, and she meets a young Bahamian boy who, you know, they are attracted to each other. And the boy's mother is also attracted to the grandfather. So you know, they start to get along. That starts. And then suddenly everything goes horribly wrong when the other grandparents from New York turn up and decide that this has gone on long enough, that this child is obviously not receiving the very strict upbringing and the a very high level of education that she requires, and therefore they're going to go to court and try and take her away. She doesn't want to go, the grandfather doesn't want her to go, and the dolphins especially don't want her to go, because she's great friends with them and she works at a dolphin sanctuary.
So class warfare there.
Yeah, that's it.
What is the reason this is written? Was it there's a certain reason that the writer wanted to write the story?
Well, there was there have been a few dolphin movies, you know, over the years, and the Bahamas especially hasn't had a lot of movies written and scripted there to be shot there. So I think, you know, a few things came together, and if you say the word dolphin movie, you know, to a network or a broadcaster or a production house, they tend to say, yeah, we haven't done one of those for a little while. Let's have a dolphin movie. And I think that's probably what happened. And I have to say, you know, I mean, the production quality, I mean, I don't know if you've had a chance to look at the trailer even, you know, is really high. And it's definitely a family movie. There's nothing in it that's going to upset anyone.
Even but the conservatives, time, you know, right? Conservatives.
Yeah, well, yes, but it gets
conservationists is what I meant to say. Yes.
Conservationists, yeah, absolutely.
Your mind is thinking on other things, Dave. Not conservatives don't want dolphins, so now conservatives don't like dolphins.
I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised.
So, your hope ever to do another dolphin movie?
Like, I'd love to.
Reaching out and say, or you can't wait to swim with dolphins after COVID, or a chance again? Do it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Maybe he's going to buy his own dolphin to give his cat company.
Maybe my own next movie should be a dolphin movie. Yeah, or perhaps I'll do something different, like a turtle movie. I'm sure turtles have to have just the same intelligence.
Hey, we haven't done a turtle movie in a while. Yeah.
Yes.
So that's awesome. Oh. Yeah. So kind of to go back and all the things, Peter, plans for you right now. After this, is it kind of give us an update, the challenge of auditioning during this time period of COVID. Give us an update, where's it going? Yeah.
Well, I'm very lucky because I'm a writer as well. I actually spent the first 6 months of COVID writing a TV series, which is going to be shooting in Ireland in May, April, May. It's called The Free State. So I'll be going over there for a while. But I also used the second part of last year to get together and shoot my own movie, which is called Outrageous, which is a as I say, a romantic comedy. You could call it a sex comedy, but I call it both. So that we've just started post-production on, so perhaps, you know, end of the year. So I have actually been very fortunate in my COVID lockdown year. I know a lot of my colleagues have just had the most miserable time, you know, and I know it's been difficult for you guys too, because although it's, you know, what you're doing is fantastic, but at the same time, it's really nice to meet people face to face.
I can't wait. And that's the thing of the business of traveling, things like that. You can't do that anymore. You know, I'm fine with the interviews because I've done them in my studio for years. But the fact is, never to get to do red carpets, not get to travel. You know, even though some people do, Dave travels, but, you know, it just all depends your mindset in a lot of ways. And do you really need to travel with this environment now? So where we're going is Peter and I started with the whole thing, the event we're planning with the 10,000th interview that we're going to have all these celebrities in LA. Dave will be there. We'll be partying and no one will be wearing masks. Let's hope that happens.
Wouldn't that be wonderful?
Interviews, that might happen. Let's do math. If I average 10 a week for 300, for X amount of weeks, when will that be? Maybe 2 years. So we should be right here.
Oh, Neil, it'll be so wonderful. I'll be able to kiss you without a mask. I mean, it'll just be wonderful. We'll be able to rub heads.
Exactly. And how tall are you, Peter?
I'm 5'11".
I'm 6'10". So,
there's no chance.
So, I mean, the rubbing heads, that doesn't sound good. All right, so Dave, let's ask the caregiver Dave question. The reason why I call him caregiver Dave is he has a story, and ask that question to Peter.
Okay.
Yeah, and COVID hasn't been too bad to me because I've been doing a lot of television interviews, and now I don't have to travel. I can do them right from Zoom. But about 24 years ago, my wife had this headache of her life, lasted 3 days. And on that fourth day, it turned into a stroke. She lost her speech, became paralyzed on one side. And in that moment, our world, Peter, turned upside down. Nothing would ever be the same again. She lost her speech. She can still communicate, but she can't speak right now. And she's still paralyzed on one side. And we travel all around the world now, just sharing our message to caregivers, because I discovered there are so many other caregivers who are suffering and feeling lost and alone. And we struggled for a couple of years. And I didn't want him to suffer anymore. I didn't want him to give up like I almost gave up. And so I'm Dave, the caregiver's caregiver. And so I'm writing my fourth book now. And the bottom line is, I believe that if anyone is either going to become a caregiver or need a caregiver, it's this caregiver tsunami coming. Baby boomers are getting older, your parents, your grandparents. How has caregiving touched your life? Or has it?
You know, it's an extraordinary thing. I've got to the age where a lot of us start losing our parents. I've lost both of mine now. The thing is, it almost makes you feel guilty because both of them died fairly quickly and relatively easily. My mother, bless her heart, just got up in the morning and fell over, and that was it.
That's how I want to go.
I mean, you know, there was no warning at all. So I have not been in the position which so many millions of people of my age, particularly, and much younger, of course, have been in, of the lingering death of someone who you really love. You cannot abandon them. You have to abandon your own life in order to give them the last, you know, year or two of their lives. And it's just the most extraordinary sacrifice that millions of people all over the world are making. And it's especially now in COVID times, of course, it's extremely difficult because, quite frankly, you have to risk your own life to save your loved ones, you know, and if you're allowed to, you know, it is the most extraordinary thing. And it's definitely not, there's not enough attention given to the caregiver and their roles. It's very often women, but not always, such as in your case. Yeah. You have to ask yourself the question as a caregiver, you know, why has this happened to me and not to anyone else? And I think the answer is, well, it has happened to vast numbers of people. People like me, you could say I was lucky in that my parents both had a peaceful, quick passing. And I didn't have years and years and years of looking after them. But, you know, it's when I think about my own death, as we all should regularly, you know, we should think about that. When I think about that and approaching it, you know, of course, I hope it happens swiftly and easily. But if it doesn't, then who's going to look after me? Will my son have to care for me in my, you know, in my dotage? Perhaps if I'm unfortunate enough, as so many of our friends are, if I'm unfortunate enough to have one of those diseases where you start to lose your mind before your body, you know, it's just such a large area of concern.
Peter, I just screened The Father with Anthony Hopkins. My goodness.
Yeah.
And Tony Bennett is the latest one. His family just said he's.
But if you watch that movie, I don't know if it's getting a good move in Hollywood, but.
Which one, Neil?
I was born The Father.
The Father.
So I guess that's a plug for the movie already. But yeah. But Peter, so it's great catching up. Where can your fans follow you? Are you on social media and stuff for people to connect with you?
Okay, I have to admit to you, I am not on social media. Okay, I was born before the internet, and I've never really caught up. Of course, I'm on Zoom now, which is pretty amazing. You know, hey, I'm on Zoom, everybody, and I did that myself with these fingers. You know, but I am the most useless social media person.
Someone like Neil. He can fix you up. He can hook you up. Take care of it.
I have a social media presence of zero, I'm afraid. So, no. A fan actually opened a Facebook thing for me, and I've never been on it, and I've never been able to shut it down.
How many likes so far?
I've no idea who likes me.
All right. So, Peter, we could check out Dolphin Island very easily at the website, right?
It'll be on pretty much any streaming platform pretty soon.
Including Netflix.
I don't know about that.
No, Netflix. Yes. See, Dave, Netflix is different. Streaming service sells it. Netflix, you got to get it picked up in another run after that. So the streaming services you have to pay to download.
Okay, Netflix, so Hulu,
where they're going to pay you to stream the film.
Yeah.
So Netflix pays you, then they put that film on there. But it's the others, even though they're subscription based, like Amazon also you you have to pay for certain films to download.
Right. But if you Google Dolphin Island, if I can use Google, is that allowed? Yes.
Yes.
Dolphin Island. They'll direct you to where you can see it. I believe it comes out March the 3rd. So, yeah.
Well, I appreciate it, Peter. Appreciate you coming on.
Yes.
It's very good to meet you.
Great interview. Thank you.
Thanks, Peter.
And I'll be in that Super Bowl.
I'm ready. We're already
Neil Haley Super Bowl, folks.
10,000 interviews, and Peter will be there, and everyone all together in one place for a super spreader event.
A red carpet event. Right. Yes.
Yes, exactly. At Dave's place. All right. Take care. I'll see you guys.
Bye-bye.
All right, guys. That was Caregiver Celebrity 7. Take care.